From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Carlos.
Berkeley.
Potrero Hill.
Vernal Heights.
Sharp Park.
Park Pacifica.
Vivo in Union City.
Coming up, how one art project is connecting San Francisco residents with refugees.
Are you guys hoping to go back to Syria, or are you going to try and go to Europe?
For sure, Syria.
Then a comedian who's okay with you not liking her jokes.
Some people were laughing, but some people were also really mad at me. Like, I could see some of the people looking at me and being like, wow, I hope my granddaughter's life is nothing like this.
And we find out the answer to this week's audiograph mystery sound.
If you have a toned outfit, that's great. If you have a gingerbread, a pepper cups outfit, that's great.
Connecting communities. Today on Cross Currents, stay with us. The United Nations estimates that over 4 million Syrians have fled their homes, seeking refuge from a brutal civil war that's killed more than 250,000 people since 2011. Where survivors will live is an open question. Here in the U.S., 31 governors nationwide oppose giving Syrian refugees safe haven in their states. In learning about the Syrian civil war from afar, it can be easy to get lost in the numbers and lose perspective on the people living amidst and fleeing from the violence. A public art installation in San Francisco is trying to make that chasm a little smaller by connecting Bay Area residents directly to Syrian refugees with the help of a shipping container, a Skype account, and a little gold paint. KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma has the story.
Two young trombone players are performing a duet inside a shipping container in an emptied lot in Hayes Valley. The musicians, Harry Gonzalez and Brett Wyatt, are from the San Francisco Symphony Youth Orchestra, and they address their audience through the screen in front of them.
So we just wanted to show you a little bit of how the art culture is really prevalent here in San Francisco. It's more than just tech.
An interpreter from the UN on the other end translates for the two Syrian teenage girls who are listening intently to this concert through a screen of their own in a refugee camp over 7,000 miles away. The sun has just risen in San Francisco as the trombonists finish, as if their horn music is issuing in the day. In Jordan, it's evening, around 5 p.m. The trombone players ask what the girls' names are through the translator.
I am Aman.
Mirbat and Aman.
If their voices sound a little muffled, well, remember, that's because we're in a shipping container. And this conversation is as unusual as its setting. Close to 80,000 Syrians live in the Za'atari refugee camp, including more than 40,000 children and teens. Amat and Mirbat, who are both 17, have lived there since 2013.
Yes, thank you for all your talents. We really admired what you played, and we admired what the talents you have.
Thank you. Hopefully it's not too loud.
They're talking to each other thanks to an international public art installation by Shared Studios called Portals. In 2014, creator Amar Bakshi came up with the idea to place gold shipping containers like this one all across the world, in Cuba and Afghanistan and Honduras and Iran and Mexico, and encourage strangers in different countries to talk to each other over Skype. He says he was inspired in part by the way we use technology, or rather, the way that we don't.
We have Facebook and Twitter, Skype, but we use it to generally speak to our own family, share with our own friends.
Sitting on a nearby bench, Bakshi tells me he hopes that these encounters are purposeless. The conversation isn't tied to any specific agendas. The motive, if any, is to get a sense of other people's daily lives. People are sent in with only one prompt.
What would make today a good day?
So far, Portals has facilitated 7,000 conversations in 7 countries. And though it's not the main goal, Bakshi believes the conversations in the portals could lead to very real outcomes, especially in a city like San Francisco.
There's a lot of excitement in all our portal locations to connect to San Francisco because it is, and it's imagined as, a place of incredible entrepreneurship, world-changing ideas, incredible financial resources, and really smart people here. Our portal locations, as people know, are similarly talented. They're not as well financially resourced, but have incredible amounts to contribute and do.
He sees the portals as a platform for a budding microeconomy, or a stage for musicians and artists to demonstrate their gifts, or even an international classroom. Another group here this morning is from the nearby French International High School. They have 20 minutes and a list of questions they want to ask, filling the silences with their curiosity.
And what does a typical day look like for you?
In the morning, I wake up and go to school. Then after school, I go to a youth empowerment center. We read to other students. And we're also establishing a new project for a girls' committee in the camp.
At times, it's awkward. It's hard to know when to speak up.
So are you guys hoping to be able to?
No, they have a question.
Still, they share their goals and aspirations.
What would you like to do later in life?
I want to have a big role in my community, not only a housewife.
And begin to probe the ways in which their lives are drastically different.
Where do you guys, do you have a sort of home at the camp, or do you sleep? Where do you sleep?
We sleep in caravans. We have caravans and we sleep in.
When it's over, the students say goodbye and file out into the deep blue hues of the early morning to debrief. I spoke to students Sophia Clark and Oriane Bahi.
This is quite interesting because it's a different perspective versus textbooks. Instead, we talked to some real refugees.
Yeah, we actually had a really long list of questions, but you don't know what the limit is and what will like hurt them in a way, like the type of questions. So, and there was a bit, we were kind of shy. It's kind of, I mean, it was a big group, so it was difficult to like get in your question.
After the students are done reflecting, they gather up their things and shift back into their normal routine. Outside the portal is a Burning Man art temple, a artisanal ice cream stand, and a truck that sells really expensive juice. The dissonance between this environment and that of a Syrian refugee camp feels pretty stark. Bakshi, the creator of Portals, says that uncomfortable feeling, it's a good thing.
How do people deal with the fact that they go in there for 20 minutes and see someone's life concerns are radically different than their own? Well, it's going to happen either way. That's happening whether or not you know it.
I tried to get in touch with Mervat and Ahmet later, but I couldn't get a hold of them. So I never learned what they took away from this exchange. But the conversation I heard was still pretty remarkable, if only because without a project like Portals, it probably never would have happened. In San Francisco, I'm Hannah Kingsley Ma for Cross Currents.
The gold-painted shipping container is no longer stationed in Hayes Valley, but the team behind it is actively looking for a new San Francisco location. In the meantime, they'll be opening a portal at Stanford University during the spring. More details are at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. San Francisco comedian Kate Willett is accustomed to not fitting in, which makes her perfect for stand-up comedy. Willett takes her self-described weirdness to the stage to challenge ideas about what women can and cannot do. She spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about using humor to get her point across.
So in this city, San Francisco, that's in the midst of this tech-induced transformation, you've got kind of an old-school San Francisco freaky living situation.
It's true.
You live in an art collective in a converted church building.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about that? And does it give you material for your comedy?
Yeah, it's a convent, and like a converted convent, and there's 23 people who live there. It definitely gives me a lot of material for my comedy. It's weird because I've only really felt the change like in San Francisco this intensely maybe during the past 3 years, and I was thinking about like if I started comedy now instead of, you know, several years ago, like, would I have a bunch of jokes about, like, tech stuff, you know? Because I kind of, like, spent a lot of time in San Francisco with all these, you know, freaky people, polyamorous clowns, like, weird hippies, like, baristas, like, conspiracy theory guys. And my experience of this city was very shaped by those things. But I think if I moved here now, it wouldn't be the same thing.
And how did you get into comedy? Were you doing that already when you came here?
I tried it for the first time when I was in Chicago in grad school there. And then maybe a year into grad school, I dropped out / was kicked out of grad school and decided, okay, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian.
And what were you in grad school for?
I was in grad school for theater. And I was at this school called DePaul. And it was a constant struggle there because there was just like a giant emphasis on, you know, like you need to sort of fit into this box that's like very, you know, actressy, like just like extremely good posture and kind
was
of.
Was this about theater, stage?
Yeah, and I was just constantly getting in trouble for being like too weird.
So you knew already when you were heading towards comedy, oh, this is an area where I can be more myself.
Exactly.
Is that kind of what drew you to it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and also say what I wanted to say because I'd be in some plays sometimes that, you know, it's somebody else's words and I didn't always agree with whatever message the play had, you know, like there's a lot of kind of shades of worldview between I'm adamantly opposed to this and I'm behind it 100%. And I like going up on stage as a stand-up because I can only say stuff that I really feel like I'm behind 100%. And if I'm not, if I find that I'm not, if my point of view evolves, I can just change it and do something different.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of doing stand-up and your act, your comedy can get kind of dirty or explicit, but let's listen to a bit that's safe for the public radio airwaves.
Okay, sounds good.
Sometimes, as a woman, I feel like my friends really judge me for being what they like to call promiscuous, but I prefer to think of it as attractive. But the other day, I was talking to this friend of mine, and he says to me, he's like, "Kay, listen, dude, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but just like, I'm really worried about you, because you've been having a lot of one-night stands." I was just like, whoa, I appreciate your concern, but do you seriously think I should have sex with all those douchebags again?
So you do talk a lot about sex in your act.
That's true.
And you identify as a feminist. And
yes.
I'm wondering if those things are connected for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that women, like one of the major areas, maybe the most kind of the area where women have been the most disempowered is, you know, around sexuality. I mean, also economically, but definitely in sexuality as well. You know, there's still like a huge stigma against female sexuality a lot of the time. Like if a woman pursues sex, it's, you know, it's like, oh, she's either desperate or, you know, she's loose or, you know, there's something wrong with her, she's not worthy of respect. Or, you know, even in a lot of kind of sexual relationships, you know, especially heterosexual relationships. I've been in relationships with women and men, but I've noticed especially in heterosexual relationships, the power dynamic is always part of the relationship. Like the fact that, you know, one person has a lot more societal power in that relationship than the other person, I think is something that's important to discuss. And a lot of the way that you see that come out is through sex. And so I think that that's kind of why it's particularly important for me to explore that topic as a feminist. And also it's funny, people are very vulnerable during sex and the emotions are involved. And anytime people are just really themselves and kind of like behaving on impulse, that's more likely to lead to hilarious situations. I try to kind of expose the power dynamic and then also find what's funny about it because humor is a way that people will actually listen to it. Like if you're just talking at people about feminism, like a lot of people do not want to listen to that or they don't think it's an interesting subject. But I find it very rewarding when I see guys like sort of register when I'm doing comedy, like they'll be laughing, but I'll also see it register that like, oh, hey, like the ladies that I'm sleeping with are people. And that, it's like
the light bulb goes on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really fun.
What is your comedy writing process like?
Usually it's a mix of like sort of sitting down with a notebook for a while and thinking about what's important to me and kind of writing about certain topics. And then when I go on stage, actually putting those topics into the structure of jokes.
So some part of that you kind of improvise?
Yeah. For some reason, being in front of an audience is what helps you make something funny.
Like you're saying, sometimes you go out and you don't know quite what you're going to do. But even if you do know what you're going to do, it's just you alone with a microphone just talking.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes it goes great and sometimes it doesn't. Do you have any stories about bombing or?
I mean, it usually goes well at this point because I have jokes that I've tested in front of a lot of audiences. But I did do a show recently out in Walnut Creek that there was, like, some people were laughing, but some people were also really mad at me. Like, I could see some of the people looking at me and being like, wow, I hope my granddaughter's life is nothing like this.
And having developed a thick skin like that, has that affected other areas of your life?
I think that I developed the thick skin before I started stand-up, and that was kind of what allowed me to finally start stand-up. Like, when I was in theater school, man, it was really hard because I for sure did not fit in with those people. I think that at the end of that year, when I finally decided to start stand up, I was like ready, you know? I was like, I don't need people to like me. Like, I hope that they do, but if they don't, I'm not going to die, you know? Which, like, I think it's kind of like contrary to how the human biology works, because I think that you're supposed to feel like you're going to die if people don't like you. Like, so that you like adjust to behave,
so you can stay
fit in with the tribe,
the group.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Don't get eaten by a lion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was comedian Kate Willett speaking with KLW's Jen Cheehan. You can catch Willett hosting the comedy showcase The Mission Position every Thursday at the Cynic Cave at San Francisco's Lost Weekend Video on Valencia Street. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
If you have a Tolda outfit, that's great. If you have a gingerbread, a peppercocks outfit, that's great. We are totally non-sexist. We have girl compass. We have every kind of peppercock out here, so if you have any costumes, let us know.
We asked you what that was and where you think we recorded it. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs brings us the answer.
If you celebrate Christmas, right about now you might be starting to look for the perfect tree, or bake cookies, or stress out about presents. I do all that too, but I also start looking for my long white nightgown, a glitter crown to wear in my hair, and I start singing Swedish songs under my breath. That's because it's the beginning of Lucia season. It's named for Santa Lucia, or Saint Lucia, and it's Sweden's biggest Christmas tradition. Here in the Bay Area, many of us learned that song as part of this choir.
They listen to me yell all afternoon. Okay, singers.
That's the choir's leader, Karin Gensler. She's also my mom.
Okay, do I have all the singers?
My mom has been bringing me to Lucia since I was 4 or 5 years old. Her mom immigrated from Sweden in the early 1950s and brought her to Lucia when she was a little girl. Mom's really attached to her Swedish roots. You can tell by my name, Nina Inga Margareta Maud Gensler-Debs. For the past 12 or so years, my mom's led the Bay Area Scandinavian Children's Choir. They rehearse at the Norwegian Seamen's Church, a sort of hub for all kinds of Scandinavian activities here in San Francisco.
If you have a tomte outfit, that's great. If you have a gingerbread, a peppercocks outfit, that's great. We are totally non-sexist. We have girl tomtes. We have every kind of pepparkaka here, so.
Tomtes and pepparkakor. These are Swedish Christmas elves and gingerbread cookies. There's a whole cast of characters in the procession, but most are angels, and one lucky girl gets to be the Lucia, who wears candles in her hair, electric candles, that is, and leads the whole procession.
Let's start with our silly song, okay? If you're happy and you know it.
Rehearsals are led in English because there's a range of kids here. Some of them are fluent, many know just a little Swedish. Like 7-year-old Olivia Olmqvist.
I could say hello, hallo, and some people ask me to say cucumber, so gurka.
Two very useful words. She tells me that the choir is a great place to learn more Swedish.
Take a big breath. Okay. God afton. You're inviting everybody to a party.
Good afton, good evening. The party they're welcoming everyone to is the annual Swedish Christmas Fair, a day-long event where the choir performs 4 times.
And where do I have tomtes? So the tomtes are going to come sneaking in. And again, it's easy to watch them rather than remembering to sing.
During this song, the tomtes, the little Swedish Christmas elves, come creeping through the audience as the rest of the choir sings Tomtarnas julnatt, the tomtes' Christmas night. The song is all about elves creeping into people's houses in the dead of night to eat food and have a party. These mischievous elves are a much tamer version of the pagan spirit Santa Lucia was originally supposed to ward off. The Swedish tradition comes from the Italian Santa Lucia, a young Christian martyr who may or may not have gouged out her eyes in order to demonstrate her dedication to God. Yikes. Santa Lucia is symbolized by a lantern, and legend has it that people summoned her for help against the evil spirits that would come on the darkest day of the year.
And the image of a young woman with candles in her hair bringing light to the dark winter was something that was very appealing and adopted by Swedes as a major winter festival.
Light in winter is important in dark northern countries. In Sweden right now, the sun's only up for about 6 hours a day, rising around 8:45 a.m. and setting just a little before 3 in the afternoon. So a lot of darkness, and people are very ready to welcome Lucia as a beacon of light.
The Lucia is sort of like the queen, and her attendants are sort of like the princesses. It's a very exciting thing to be Lucia.
It was just really fun telling all my Swedish family in Sweden, like, I got to be the real Lucia.
Mohini Ekstrand is 15, and she's been a part of the choir for about a decade.
And meeting Swedish people and being like, oh yeah, you know Lucia? I was the Lucia once.
I was also Lucia once, when I was 17. It was fun. I got a necklace and a special ceremony, and I got to sing my own song.
När julnatt morgon glimmar, jag vill till stallet gå.
But the most fun was seeing how thrilled it made my mom.
My brother is also here on the West Coast. We've looked at each other and thought, isn't this extraordinary that here we are on the Pacific Rim with all of these families and children recreating our childhood.
Back at rehearsal, my mom is splitting the choir up into the younger kids and an older group, who will sing a couple of more complicated songs, like this one, Jul, Jul, Strålande Jul, one of my very favorites. It means Christmas, Christmas, glorious Christmas. And the lyrics are beautiful. This means, roughly, heavenly crowns with sparkling lights, glimmering arcs in all of God's houses, hymns that are sung throughout the ages, eternal longing for light and peace. As I listen to the choir sing of light and peace, joy and harmony, I can't help but think of other groups of immigrants, migrants who have their own music and childhood traditions, people who are leaving their homes looking for somewhere to start again and find their own versions of peace and joy. So, to everyone seeking home, the choir and I want to wish you a most merry Swedish Christmas. God jul. For Cross Currents, jag är Nina Inga Margareta Maud Gensler Debs.
You can see the Bay Area Swedish Children's Choir at this year's Swedish Christmas Fair on Saturday, December 5th. More information is at klw.org. Our winner this week is Anna Beeler. Congratulations, Anna. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. Thanks for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
The leaves on the trees are falling.
If you've got ideas for where we should record next, tell us about them. Email us at news@kalw.org. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio.
So I'm coming home for Christmas to be with my family and loved ones so dear.
Our team includes Shireen Adil, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler Debs, Angela Johnston, Ian Lewis, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, James Rowlands, Raja Shah, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by the Oakland band Ghost and the City. They'll be at Awaken Cafe in Oakland tomorrow, December 4th. Doors open at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.